you, Oscar, for your time. It's coming very, very close to the third weekend in May for 2014. And of course, that brings upon the date of the Molokai Ski Race. So as you've mentioned to us, and I believe is on social chat, you've been doing a fair bit of training and preparing for this year's race. But just before we get to that, I'd like to ask you a little bit about your paddling history so we can educate people on your journey, which I'm sure there'll be plenty of people keen to find out things they don't know. So can you just tell us briefly, when did you start paddling and what got you involved in the sport?
Well, obviously my father was a paddler. He came out of Germany and he started me paddling, and how I started at a very young age, at 7, and then I didn't really take it into full stride till I was about 10, 11. Then my biggest claim to fame was winning the Nipper Ironman, and from there the junior and senior Ironman. And while I was doing that, I was paddling. So when I was under 14, I never forgot, I was already 6'4" and 200 pounds then. And I was winning under 14, under 16, and under 18. And then the seniors, I think I came third or fourth in the 10,000 meters. So when I was 14. So my background was flat water, sprinting canoes, plus surf ski. I did my first surf ski race when I was about 15, which is the Scottbridge to Brighton. And then I won my first PE to East London, which is a 244 kilometers, when I was 18, beating a legend, Tony Scott. So I've been doing this sport for a long time, but the one thing that kept me back from competing against Clint was too young, but to compete against all the other people, is that I wasn't allowed in any Olympic discipline. So I wasn't allowed to sprint at the prime of my career.
Right. And of course, that was for the majority of South African sporting people on an Olympic level due to the apartheid regime. Is that right?
Correct. So I couldn't. In fact, what happened in the Molokai, and I found out about the Molokai when I was 20, is that I won 7 in a row in the Molokai, and then they banned me for 3 years because it was getting close to the Olympics. They said, no, even if you train or do anything in South Africa, we're not allowing you to race. So that's why I had a bit of a break as well.
Okay. Well, look, let's talk briefly about that, because you've led nicely to the point. I was talking with somebody the other day, and I'm very keen to hear your answer before I elaborate further. What first got you involved or gave you knowledge of the Molokai ski race? What first introduced that to your scope?
Well, what happened is I won the junior and senior Ironman in South Africa, first person in the world. And then 1 month later, a guy called Grant Kenny did it 1 month later in April. His feat was on TV. Mine was like in the smalls and the classifieds in the newspaper. And then from that day, we tried to get to race Grant against me, because one from South Africa, one from Australia. And in those days, did we ever manage to do it because of apartheid, Australia were really heavy against it. And then I heard about a race in Hawaii. There was an Ironman race that Grant Kenny was going to attend. I went all the way there with Herman, my brother, and my father, to go and race in this Ironman. And guess what? There was no Grant Kenny. He didn't even know about it. It was just a figment of the guy's organizer's imagination. But when I was there, I heard about this race, the Molokai to Oahu, which Grant Kenny had won 3 or 4 times. I stand to be corrected. And I knew, okay, this is one race he has to come back to. And lo and behold, he did come back to, and that's how I heard about the Molokai, and it was in October 1983.
Right, and of course, shortly after that was when you first raced, Grant, in the Molokai ski race, is that correct?
Yes, I actually put everything on the line. I was at university, because this race was in April that I was racing in Hawaii. I had to put everything on the line and say, okay, well, I'm going to stay here, because I couldn't afford to fly back and things like that. I didn't own airplanes. I was at university doing a BCom, and I was on a rugby union bursary. And so I had to say, okay, I give all that up and say, okay, I'm going to race this guy, Grant Kenny. And I trained in Hawaii on a V10 sport kind of boat. And then I got my boat that I shaped when I was about 17, sent out to Hawaii so that I could race against Grant.
Yes. Okay, so tell us if you can very briefly, what I was talking about just prior to you giving your answers is all of us that are currently winners of the Molokai race, bar maybe Hank McGregor, so the winners of about the last 22 years, 20 of them probably first went to Hawaii because of Grant Kenny. I certainly first heard about it because of Grant Kenny, Dean Gardner, who's won it 9 times, yourself also, that wanted to go there and race against Grant. He certainly has been an incredible figure in the world of ocean paddling and also Ironman racing in the world over a long period of time, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think not as much. People in South Africa actually don't really know him. I just knew him because I was racing against him. Because we, again, in those apartheid years, we never even got press from Australia. So that was the first bit of life-saving press we ever had was in April 1977, around there. So he, in South Africa, we didn't know him. I just heard about them because of that. And then from then on, obviously, I made it my point to know about him. As I say, that's the whole thing about the Molokai, is that you get somebody like Grant telling you about it. And then once you've done it once, obviously, that's then you've done. And then that same thing like Hank, all the new people they look in South Africa, they probably hear it from myself and Herman.
Yes, that's right. Well, I mean, the Kennys are very big kayaking figures around the world because, as you know, Grant Kenny has medals in Olympic kayaking as well. And he's probably been, in those early years, one of the most decorated paddlers, being able to not only win Molokai, but win Australian surf ski, world surf ski titles, and also win Olympic medals in sprint kayaking. He was a very, very well-known person amongst all the Europeans that I've known for a very long time. And he's certainly been a great linchpin to hold a lot of the eagerness and interest, I think, amongst the sport, which has been great for us all.
Yes, absolutely.
So tell me, Oscar, let's cut to the chase about Hawaii. It's a fantastic race. You've done it many, many times. You've been going there over three decades, I think, this year. So what is it about the channel for all our first-time paddlers that lures Oscar back to want to do Hawaii?
I mean, the bottom line is obviously I've got a long history with the race. I had competed my first one in 1983 and winning 12, which is also quite nice. The bottom line is Hawaii is a dream location, number one, for your family to go to, number two, for paddling. 99% of the time it's downwind. Even if you have a terrible Molokai, you invariably get there and it's downwind every single day, and that's the fun part of it. And then obviously the challenge of the actual race is fantastic, going between two islands. They're never going to move, nothing's going to change, just the conditions change. So there's a lot of mystique about going across any channel. I mean, the sea kayakers always talk about going through between two islands. And this is the unique place where it's beautiful, clean water. And I say, there are trade winds, so most of the time there is trade winds coming into Hawaii, and the winds are blowing, and it makes it so much fun.
And what do you think it is? Many people have described it over the years. What do you think it is about the Kauai Channel that people say it's got a bit of a mystique to it? Dawid Mukki once made a comment, I think he was talking to me, and he said to me something like, he feels like, in a way, in the three times that he's competed, while there's a group of guys that could win it, the channel sort of picks who it chooses to win on that day out of those top few guys. I'm not quite sure I completely agree with that, but it certainly has an element of mystique about it. What do you think it is that makes it such a challenging race and so unpredictable amongst all the top people that perform in it?
I think the biggest reason, I mean, and again, it's just my opinion, is that it sounds much easier when you're looking from the outside to say, okay, this is only 52 kilometers, the record's 322, but nobody does 52 kilometer paddles downwind and realize the concentration it takes in that channel. And you've got the wind swell going one way and you've got the ocean swell going one way. So it takes a lot of concentration to make sure that you catch every wave. Because if you miss a wave, and David's always said, he says the one reason why he can't keep up in the Molokai is that he can't concentrate for 3.5 hours. And I think that's so true. And and you've probably done the same thing, Kintus. I've done so many fast times in South Africa, but I can't even get close to that in Hawaii. It's just something mystique about that channel that I can't get. As I say, I've just sent you that link where I've done 2 hours, 48 minutes for 52 kilometers, which is the same length as the Molokai, and my best Molokai's time is 3 hours, 22 minutes. I mean, that is so much slower. Yeah.
Yes. Now, I just chatted to Dean Gardner when we were on our way home from Tahiti in regard to that very point, and I said to him, every year I've trained for Hawaii, I've beaten 3 hours, every single year. And you go to Hawaii, and not one year have I been able to get anywhere near 3 hours. So
it's got to change. I mean, there's got to be a year where it's going to be flying. I mean, and believe you me, you can ask Matthew, who did the run as well. He was in the V14, as I was in the V10 sport. it wasn't huge winds. It was maybe 15, 20 knots. I mean, Molokai, if you look now, it's blowing 25 to 30 knots. And it's just the mystique of the channel. I don't know what it is. It just sometimes goes slowly.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it blows a little faster this year, huh?
Yeah, me too. I hope so.
Okay. Really educated three suggestions from you to a lot of the people that, because I have a lot of paddlers that I'm coaching and programming in this year's race, and I've got about 17 to 18 people that have never done an international ski race before, and they are going this year, and I know at least they will be listening to this, and I'm sure many others. What would you suggest to those three people they make sure they do to ensure themselves a good race?
I think, and I've said this in my pre-race briefing, is the most important part of the Molokai channel is the second half. Nobody wins medals on the first half, and so many people get excited because it's their first international race and they go off too hard. So it's very important to understand not to go off too hard. As you know, I always negative splits. So I really try and keep the pace down as slow as I can, not to lose the leaders of the first half. But the second half is what counts. So that's number one thing. Number two, you've got to scout out the finish. You don't want to do that whole race and realize, gee, I get a bummy on my head and I haven't finished the Molokai like Patrick Dolan did last year. You actually want to make sure you know where the finish is, and don't change anything before the Molokai. If you've been racing on X juice or Y juice, keep on those drinks. Don't change anything. Don't change the paddle, your boat length, suddenly your leg length. Don't change anything. The only thing you can change, as you know I do, is your paddle length. But don't change anything else, because I think that's very important to keep it the same. Don't change your diet the day before. Don't change anything.
Okay. That's good advice. Now, what about on the race day itself? So you've given us some ideas about keeping everything in a system that you're used to, making sure that you've done some scouting around the finish line area on your ski so you know where you're coming into. And, of course, you know, making sure that you can go the distance and finish the back half of the race. But when they are standing on the beach, and because I know I look at a lot of people's faces and I'm always quite relaxed because I've raced around the world for 30 years in some pretty big races, and I feel quite relaxed with Molokai because it's not a sprint race, so there's no real urgency at the start. But I look at some people's faces and I can quite clearly see they'd prefer to be probably back on Oahu having a margarita somewhere under a nice shady tree rather than feeling what they're feeling. So what would you say to people when they're feeling all those nerves and something that may trigger them to relax a little bit before the race? What is something that you do for that area?
I mean, the whole thing, again, you must just try and make everything exactly the same. So many people get so hyped up, and it all actually starts before the actual that day, because what people are suddenly, they don't drink the night before because it's so important, and then they don't sleep. So now they've got that happen because they haven't drunk, they're nervous, and then they don't sleep. All those things, they've got to keep those things exactly the same as you do every other day, like you sleep nicely and everything. And the whole thing is just be calm. There's no rush at the start. So if you know, just make sure you're getting the start on time. Don't rush anything. Try and do everything a little bit earlier and relax. Believe me, a few deep breaths and don't worry about what's going to happen then.
Okay. A couple of little tips that a few people might be able to use that I come up with a few thoughts that you could convey from what you do. How long do you like to get to Hawaii before you do the race?
Well, you see, you guys are much more fortunate. I try and get there 12 days before the race because I've got 12 time zones to get over my jet lag, and I think that helps. So one day per hour of time zone, I always do that. And then I try and get into my boat, and I actually paddle, even if I'm doing a short paddle, I make sure I've got all my juice that I'm going to carry on the race in my boat all the time. So I'm getting used to the extra instability and things like that. I make sure, and also practice in your actual race kit, your pants that you're going to wear and things like that, so you actually know that you're 100% happy that you've done it before, and this is like another day in the office.
Okay. And as we all know, the boat loading and the pickup area for our race packs and all those things are quite clear on a website. What about the support boat? Because it's the first time most people that attend Hawaii have ever used a support boat. So what advice would you give to them that you would like to see the support boat help you with in one of those early years when you first started? What is a support boat a benefit for, and how can you maximize it?
Well, I mean, I'm not a big support boat guy, although you have to have them. But if you're going to have them, the most important thing is to have hand signal. There's no use you trying to shout over 35 knots of wind to try and explain to this escort boat driver who might be on a different planet, fishing or doing something like that. You've got to have hand signals to understand what you want to do. And you've got to prepare the guy. This is my spare gear. This is my paddle. This is if I put my hand and wave it across my head, this is what it means. If I take my cap off, this is what it means. If I take my cap on, this is what it means. You've got to do signals, just like in life saving, so you can inform, and the escort boat driver knows what you want, and you know what, and the escort driver, again, can do it no matter how big the conditions are. In the ocean, you cannot hear anything. So you think you're shouting and saying, how's it going? It means nothing. And then the other thing is, I tend to make sure that my escort boat keeps me on the rum line, and the rum line meaning the straight line or just above the straight line. I don't like going too low or too high. I just within 500 or 600 meters of the rum line. So the direct course from Kilauea to the whale's nose, which is actually Cocoa Head, you know. So that's what I always tell my escort. Don't. And then for me, if you're in the front of the race, see where your opposition is. That's why I send my escort boats to tell me where everybody is, especially where Clint Robinson is, you know. Otherwise, I don't use them that much because, as I say, it's a race to you against the ocean, and I don't. My escort boat hasn't got juice, but if you have got juice, make sure you got signals so he knows when you want your extra juice.
All right, great advice. Yeah, that's fantastic. Maybe three more things just to discuss. Just in regard to especially this year's race, what's your feelings about the original federation taking over the event again this year?
As I say, I've been there from day one when it was run by the original federation. The bottom line is you have to have somebody that's willing to get in there, step up to the plate and actually do the work. As I say, I mean, I've tried since October 1983 to help out. And there's a few things that we've got to change, but at the moment it's a long process, and Hawaii is a difficult place to get these things organized. I'm very happy that the race is still on, which I think it's fantastic, because you realize this race has got no money, no huge draw cards, very expensive, but everybody wants to do that race. I travel around the world doing lessons all around Europe, around America, South America. Everybody wants to do the Molokai. That's on everybody's bucket list, even though it's expensive. No matter how many people have world championships in Portugal or anything, everybody wants to win that. And that's why this year it's got a very strong field of top guys, because you know Jasper Mokki's coming, and I think maybe even Sean Rice might make a guest appearance. And I just hope the weather plays ball so old person like me can give you young guys a bit of a run.
So out of that was one of my questions. So I was just told the other day by a fellow over in the US who I used to paddle against at the Olympic Games for three Olympic Games that we both attended. He said to me, someone told him that Australia's won 18 Molokais and South Africa has won 16. So naturally these two nations have nearly won every Molokai race that's existed. There's only one or two other countries that have a winner. Lewis, I think from Tahiti, won a couple, and maybe
he won two.
The first race was won by, or the first crossing was done by one of the local Hawaiians.
Yeah.
But apart from that, it's been a pretty good battle over the last, you know, 30 odd years between South Africa and Australia. So who is definitely coming from South Africa this year?
Well, I know definitely Hank's back. He's going very well. Then you've got Jasper, who actually beat him in the weekend in a race. And then you've got Sean Rice said he might be coming. So I think in the South African contingents, we've got a very strong guys. I mean, Jasper's been doing very well. Hank, as we know, has won it twice as well. So, and then the also-rans are myself. And then the doubles, we've got the Poacher brothers, Ross and Bruce Poacher. Those are the only South Africans. As I say, South Africa, it takes 28 hours of flying just to get there. You know, so it's quite a schlep.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yeah, I certainly know that from Australia, Jeremy Cotter, who's also come across to Epic this year, he's going, I believe, Corey Hill, who got third last year in Molokai and third at the World ICF ski race, he's coming as well. So with those two guys plus a fleet of others that, you know, with Dean Gardner, maybe a last minute drop in if there's some good downwind, I'm sure there'll be plenty there hunting to get round Portlock Point first at just after lunch on May 18.
Yeah, I know it is. It's a nice thing when you come around the Portlock Point. You know, you've only got 2 or 3 k's to go, and then hopefully you can catch a wave. You know, that's what you aim for the whole year.
That's what everyone wants, isn't it?
Exactly. But it's not easy. It's such a high quality field. The funny thing is that there's a lot of people that do it, and there's a lot of novices, but the top end of the race, there's never been an easy moniker. Never, ever. That's an interesting thing, because the top guys are always there. As you know, I mean, you've also been there and lost, and I've done the same thing, thinking that this is easy. I mean, that's why a guy like Tim Jacobs, as he won it.
No, I think, you know, you look at Tim, and Tim's been so successful in a lot of the hard, slogged, flat water races in Dubai and Hong Kong. But as you say, like even Hank, two or three times world kayaking marathon champion. And the year he won Molokai, the year in 2009, I think it was like dead flat. It was a mirror. It was not a bump. So it can be an interesting race. And when the swell changes, it changes everything. That's for sure.
Exactly. I mean, again, just I think that's the whole thing. I mean, at my age, I mean, the will to pedal into flat water, that's why, I mean, like Grant pulled out last year, and I heard Grant's going well. I don't know. Grant Kenny's going to be back again. He's going to be strong.
He's very fit. He's training a lot. I just saw him tonight. Yes.
No, so he'll be good. And the thing is, at this age, I mean, what are you trying to prove when you won 12 times? Now I'm going to slog for 4 hours into the wind. It's not my cup of tea. That's why, I mean, I'll always finish because it's just my character. But the fun thing is about the skill of catching the runs, as you know.
Yes. Well, just to finish up, my last thought that I had, can you describe to us just in a couple of minutes your greatest Molokai memory and why?
That's a difficult one, Clint, because, I mean, as I say, winning the first one after this icon, Grant Kenny, had won it every single one, and I came with a boat that nobody knew existed that I designed myself. So winning the first one was out of this world, and then because I'd never done it, and then obviously winning my 10th when there was you, Nathan Bagley, Dean Gardner, Herman, Daryl Bartha, was an unbelievable field to win my 10th. That was out of this world. And then winning at last year in 2012, or the year before, against you and Dean and Matt Bowman was out of this world, winning something at 49, which is unheard of in any sport, you know. So it's hard to put, but those three are sort of the highlights. And the first one is 31 years ago, so the memories probably faded a bit, but there's nothing like your first victory in anything, as you might have remembered winning your first medal in Barcelona when I was watching you.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you've certainly been going across the channel for a long time, and let's hope that this year provides a, you know, whether it be a victory or not, but a really good memory of surfing and another great paddle for everybody that enters the course.
Yeah, and I think that's important what you said. There's a lot of people, we're going there to race, but we're also going there to have fun, because there's nothing better than going downwind. If I'm happy to come second or third, if I've had a fantastic run where I've done a 3 hours 22 or 3 hours 15, I'm happy, because that's the fun part of the sport. Catching runs and going so fast is fantastic, you know. So that's what we all are interested in. That's why it attracts people all the time. We just hope the trades blow.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed for an old fella. And I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks' time. And thanks very much for your time. And we'll pop this up for everyone to have a listen to. And I'm sure a number of people will take some of your advice and use it in this year's race. So all the best, buddy, and see you soon.